Okay, this is Peter Van Ness here with Give Me Sound, and good morning, Gloucester. And I'm on the line with Paul Nelson, who is one of the guitar players and the manager and the songwriter and producer for the great Johnny Winter. And Johnny will be coming to the Larkham Theater on January 31st. And I'm thrilled to talk to Paul. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing?
How are you? I didn't realize how many hats I wore. Thank you for that introduction.
Well, no, I just got this off the web and from your label, I believe.
It's true.
Before we talk to Johnny Winter, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about producing first.
Absolutely.
You know, most people know Johnny Winter as, you know, one of the greatest guitarists who ever lived, and very many fewer people know him as a great producer. You know, and I tell people about his tremendous work with Muddy Waters, and people ask me,
"Oh, that absolutely, yeah."
Yeah, you know, and people ask me, well, what does a producer do anyhow? Isn't he just the guy with the money? And I go, no, he's the guy responsible for the sound. And then they say, well, what do you mean by that? And, well, when I try to answer that, I come up short. I'm thinking maybe you can help me. How do you, you know, what do you do as producer, and what did he do as producer?
The producer is the same in the movies, the director. He's the ringleader. He organizes everything. I mean, not just the sound of the album, but everything involved with it, especially with an album like Johnny's Last Roots or like the new one Step Back. It's organizing all the artists that you think that'll sound best on certain tracks, sending them out the mixes so they can record on it, or arranging for studio time for them to come in. It's knowing the artist well enough to get him the sounds he needs to play his best. It's knowing what kind of sound you want on a blues record as opposed to a rock record. It's knowing how to dial in sounds for drums, vocals, what effects to put on during the mixing process. It's everything, and especially when you have a lot of guests and you're assuming that you're going to do certain stuff to add to their sound once they submit their ideas. It's everything. You're a psychiatrist, you're a friend, you're a father, everything. Yeah, it's very involved.
Yeah, that's a great answer, and I assume that's what Johnny did with the Muddy Waters albums. Those great,
absolutely, yeah. Because he took Muddy, you know, he wanted the Muddy back that he listened to as a kid. He wanted that sound to come back because he was really disappointed. He told me with Electric Mud, where they wanted to turn Muddy into this electric rock guy. So after that, when he got the call to work with him, he went right back to that, where they were recording one take on a lot of that stuff with live mics, you know, getting the live traditional sound back. And that was, all that stuff was like on one take. It was just amazing.
Well, now, you know, that sort of leads me to another idea here. I know I read that you're a Berkeley grad.
Yeah.
This part of the country has got a huge music culture. And nowadays, everybody with a computer and a couple of mics thinks they can make a record, you know, but I'm often disappointed by the results of that.
Yeah, if you don't go to a major studio, it's not that big sound. I mean, you can get a sound, but there's a reason why people use big stuff. Big boards, so big rooms, large kits. Everything it has to be done through that professional equipment. And then the mastering process, I mean, there's tons of Pro Tools programs where you can self-master. I mean, we go to Sterling Sound, where it just adds that, there's a sound in the mastering that's added, that cherry on top that polishes the recordings that you've done. And, I mean, you can do some great stuff, but there's something about doing it the professional way. I love doing that kind of stuff, especially for, like, you know, you do instrumental records or fusion stuff or that kind of stuff. It's great. But when you get into stuff like this with vocals and big sounds, you know, even bands like, you know, Aerosmith or, you know, those kind of productions, or even the new ZZ Top stuff, those guys are, they're in studios. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's great. And a great answer, because I think some of the people listening, we have a lot of musicians that are coming to this show, by the way.
Oh, okay.
You have a huge fan base here in the north of Boston area, this concert's pretty much sold out. I'm sure it'll be sold out by the time you get here. And a lot of the people in the audience are going to be musicians. And based on this Roots album, I think a lot of people will be, you know, almost sitting there studying what's going on stage because...
Oh, I'm used to that, going to Berkeley. I mean, people like us can't even go to a concert anymore and look at it normally. We have to analyze every chord and every riff. It's kind of hard.
Well, yeah, but they're going to have fun, too. They're not going to be sitting there taking notes.
As long as they realize, you know, it's important, and I learned this, you know, way back, the blues is what keeps stuff from sounding like elevator music. It's so important. And you know, the more you delve into it, people, say, you know, musicians say, well, it's simplistic. It's just a certain set of chord changes and a certain round of instruments. It's, no, I used to feel like that. It's not like that. It is so difficult to play less. And it is so difficult to make the blues interesting, even with its simplicity. And listen back to the traditional stuff that Johnny's turned me into. It's like, wow, I had no idea. I had no idea. I'm talking about Robert Johnson and T-Bone and Howlin'
right.
Wolf.
Yeah.
And if you don't infuse that into your own playing, you sound just there's no soul. That's why everybody.
Well, you know, I just read a review of one of your other shows on this tour, and the guy basically said you do exactly what you just told me you should do. You know, that the sound mixes beautifully, that you mix greatly with Johnny, and that the whole thing is a...
Like you've got Johnny, who is like one of the top Rolling Stone guitar players in the world, and to back him up, the worst thing to do is to go toe-to-toe with him and try to step on him. You know, there's an art to backing up an artist as well. You know,
absolutely.
Little rhythm, little lead. I mean, you listen to the R&B recordings, you know, the Motown stuff. Those guys are playing in all the different registers. One guy play high, one guy play low. So I use those techniques to complement him so he can get his rocks off, so to speak, and still have a solid bass and rhythm. And the whole band does that. We're like a freight train. We really studied hard to do that. And once we worked in this producer thing, once the whole band worked in the studio to record as a unit, you take that philosophy and you bring it to a live situation. The studio actually improves bands' live performances.
Oh, now that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if you use the sessions as a rehearsal, but you're recording them and releasing them.
Yes, and it just happens whether you like it or not, because you go back and listen to your tracks like, oh, this was too busy, I did too much here, this stepped on that. But then when you go to a live situation, there's mics in front of you there. I mean, what's the difference? It's all coming out, and it's even worse because in a live situation, it could end up just being a big mush noise. So, you know, you want to send as much stuff as clear as possible in that ambient room where it's bouncing off Coliseum walls and nothing's really distinct, and make it as distinct as possible for them to suck that sound out to send to these massive system. And outdoors is even worse.
Yeah. Well, now this theater, you may not have been there, probably not, because we haven't had music since vaudeville days in this theater. But it was built same year as Fenway Park, actually. And it's got terrific sound. We believe you guys are going to love the sound there. And I know the audience is. It's going to be tremendously clear.
For me, it's my old stomping ground. I mean, you know, I hung around friggin' Boylston, Mass Ave.
Yeah, well, you're going to love it. I'd love to talk to Johnny for a little bit, if we could.
Absolutely. Let me put him on. And I do have to say, like you said, Johnny did produce some great recordings. And for him to hand me that golden scepter or that golden spoon or whatever they hand you, for him to have me believe in me to produce him was just a dream come true, as well as playing with him. So, yeah, I just want to let the people know that. It's great to play with the big guy. Hold on. Hello?
Johnny Winter.
Yes.
Hey, Johnny, this is Peter Van Ness here with Good Morning Gloucester and Gimme Sound. And we have a blog up here near Beverly, Massachusetts, where you're coming to play at a wonderful little theater called The Larkham on January 31st. Let me tell you, first off, we can't thank you enough for coming up north during the winter to warm us up. You have a huge fan base up here of incredibly loyal fans.
Well, that's great.
And I asked people if they had any questions that they would want to ask, and we got a lot of answers. But I wanted to start with two of them, and one guy kind of wrote a book, but I'll read a very short a piece of what he wrote in the form of a question about producing, because we know you, most people know you as one of the greatest guitar players alive. Not as many people know your producing work, so here's the question. This is from Ricardo Fernandez, who's going to be at the concert, by the way, right in front. And he says, Mr. Winter, I wonder if your loving and superb production of the Muddy Waters' later classics, so respectful of the heritage and sonic authenticity of the great American blues tradition, is a reaction to the lack of production quality and artistic control of your earlier and re-released recordings. Do you wish you had had a producer of your caliber behind you in those earlier days?
Oh, sure. Sure, I do.
What did you do, I guess, to follow up, what did you do for Muddy that you felt you missed having had done for you?
Oh, I tried to make him sound like he did back in the 50s when he was...
Well, you know, that's true. Those albums really feel like... It's almost like you took a bunch of recording equipment back in time to get a clear recording of that sound. So that's what you were trying to do?
Yeah, we were trying to make him sound old. That's when he made his best records in the 50s.
What was it about that sound that caught you? I mean, is that the sound that really inspired you to...
Oh, yeah, it really did. I just loved the way those little chest records sounded.
And on your album Roots, it feels also the same way. I mean, you've got a very clear, crisp, sort of authentic sound there. How did you do that?
Well, Paul did it. Paul was producing that.
I get a sense that we're going to be treated to that same quality of sound on your tour here in Beverly in a couple of weeks.
Definitely.
What can we expect to hear?
About 3/4 blues and 1/4 rock and roll.
Well, we're certainly ready for that. We also have another question that one of our readers gave us, another guy who's going to be at the concert. And I think you'll find this one kind of interesting. Here's what he says. This is from Tom Hawk, who is actually quite a good guitar player in his own right. Here's what he says. He said, it goes without saying that Johnny is one of the greatest rock and blues guitarists, but personally, I've always been amazed by his singing. I think he's truly a great and underappreciated blues singer. He does Dylan well, too. Johnny's version of Highway 61 is a classic. I have to say I agree with him. I love that. If he were accidentally to leave his guitar at home and just stand on stage and sing, I'd still be happy. So he says, if I had one question to ask Johnny, it would be this. How did you learn to sing, and who were your influences?
Pretty much Ray Charles, Muddy Waters, and Bobby Rublev. Not two of my favorites. I'd actually practice screaming. I'd scream into a fellow so the neighbors wouldn't think I was getting killed.
So you actually practiced screaming. What kind of a sound were you looking for when you practiced screaming?
Like Ray Charles and Bobby Graham.
Well, it works. I mean, and in fact, this album, Roots, I saw on the Facebook, it was either your Facebook or Paul's Facebook, that you're doing another album like Roots. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
It's all done now. It just hasn't been mixed yet, but it's the record's finished. It should be out in April. Yeah.
And is this going to be another record with a number of guests? I mean, I saw a picture of a mixing board. It looked like you had Clapton in there and Dr. John.
Yep. Joe Bonamassa, Jason Ritchie.
These are all people that, I'm assuming people that want to play with you and also that you want to play with. How do you choose the other guitarists and also the guests?
Paul pretty much does that.
Paul does that?
Yeah.
And you basically have trusted Paul with putting this together and sort of they come in and you sit down and have a good time, huh?
He does a great job.
So the last thing that perhaps our readers would want to know is, you know, you probably don't have to tour anymore. I mean, you could probably sit back and collect royalties from the amazing discography that you have.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. I love to play.
You love to play. So, but you go out on tour. I mean, touring has got to be hard. I mean, we all know traveling isn't easy. It's harder than it used to be. What is it that you just have to feel like you've just got to be on stage?
Oh, yeah, I love to play. I've been playing since I was like nine or ten. I'd miss it if I wasn't playing. I'd miss it a lot.
Is it something about having a live audience in the room that
oh,
makes
it's great,
it just...
Yeah, I play better when the crowd likes it. I get crowd response. I really enjoy it.
Well, I think this crowd is going to love it.
Yeah.
Like I said to Paul, I think you're going to have a lot of musicians in this crowd, you know, who have been idolizing you for a number of years, myself one of them. And you were also at Woodstock.
Yes, I was.
Now, that must have been an extraordinary experience for you. You played at midnight, is that right?
Yeah, we did. 12 o'clock.
What was the, I know it's a silly question, but what was the weather like when you played? Did it finally stop raining?
It stopped raining. It was still muddy and nasty.
All right, sir. Well, listen, we're very, very excited to see you at the Larkham Theater in Beverly on Friday night, January 31st. And we hope the rest of your tour goes well. We'll give you an extremely warm welcome. Thank you for talking to me today.
Sure. Thank you.